Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the Mod State Podcast. How you doing, my friend?
I'm great, sir, and thank you for having me back. How are you?
I'm doing well. As always, it seems like every time we come back to these podcasts, it's like, man, we've just been grinding, but it's great to be back and get as if we just don't think about politics, geopolitics, entertainment, etc. when we're not podcasting. We are, but anyway.
Oh gosh, minus the my involvement, you know, in the church, going to mass. I mean, this is that's part of the big reason I'm an economics major. This is what I think about.
Yeah.
This is what I, you know, and you and I aspire to do this full time.
Yeah.
This is us.
It drives on. So we've got some interesting things to talk about. One being, and I think we'll just go ahead and dive into it. And you know what? I haven't done this in a minute, so I'll go ahead and do it now. Haven't been promoting the podcast in sense of where to go find us, but as always, you can find us on Twitter at The Mod State, Instagram, The Mod State, Facebook, you guessed it, Mod State. And of course, we're on YouTube now. We'll be getting those videos up of these podcasts as they go along. Don't think that we just stopped doing YouTube. It's been a busy little spring into summer here, but we'll be putting those up. So with that being said,
LinkedIn, you can look first there.
Pretty much everywhere.
Spotify
now, and anywhere you get your podcasts. So
iTunes,
thanks for the uptick in listenership. So we certainly appreciate that. So
it's been great reinforcement to have the feedback and constructive criticism as well. If there's something you're like, hey guys, you could do this and make this better, let us know.
Yeah, seriously. And follow us on Twitter and you know, see the stuff that
because I'm nuts, so Nate needs all the help he can get here. So you know, it's like he came and grabbed me out of the tea party from Alice in Wonderland.
Look,
we were just jolly, and Nate needed somebody. So, folks, please help him out. Tell us what we can do better.
Yeah, I'm always out there for some constructive criticism. So, you can either tweet over at the Mod State, or you can find me on the subsidiary Twitter at @ModState_Nate. You can find me there.
And Facebook, I've never brought this up before. I think you know this, but I set us up with a little messenger deal. You go to our page on Facebook. Then you can message us there, and I've been good about responding. So
yeah, so do that, all of you.
And I do keep it relatively sane.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you do. All right. So here's a topic. We'll dive in here. So we have not addressed this topic yet, and once again, I am happy that we enacted a bit of emotional intelligence, or excuse me, emotional IQ, and just bit our tongue, bit our lip for a bit, and just let this sort of boil over, because once again, we could have gone on a 45-minute episode rant, and then nothing was going to happen, and then now it's going to happen again. So that being North Korea, denuclearization, and the North Korean summit.
I'm telling you, this administration proves my point, and I'm not saying this to knock the Trump administration by any means, but I've said it before in terms of our own strategy and as a corporation and also as a podcast and an editorial magazine, it's amazing how in a situation doing nothing can be very powerful. Sometimes the only way to win is not to play. The administration, by pulling out of events, has created so much to do. It's like, wow.
Yeah. And this, maybe I'll just, all right. So as we
just
all
dive right in there.
So as we know the timeline here, there was supposed to be a summit in Singapore. And then that
the 12th of June.
Yep, and that promptly got refuted by Donald Trump, and he wrote a nice little letter that said the message stemmed from Kim Jong-un, or a diplomat had said something bad about
he said they basically said that all of a sudden denuclearization couldn't be on the table, and that was the whole point of the summit in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, Politico made the point that I see their point. I disagree with it. You may think I think I sent you the article, but they said this was a reflection of the fact that President Trump realized he agreed to it too readily because even South Korea and Japan were shocked because North Korea just brought it up. He was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so that really...
I don't agree with them, but anyway, you extrapolate.
Well, okay, so I take this stance because here's the question that I pose. I say, who actually wins? All right, who wins out of this? And I realize that there's this weird philosophical, like, what team wins here. But even if... Okay, so denuclearization is a win.
So do you see this as a zero-sum game, just to frame this? I mean...
Not really. Here's like, my outcomes, okay? So... Off the bat, if nothing happens, in the premise that they meet at this summit, that is supposedly back on now. Yes, it is. If
a lot can happen in 10 days, as we've seen.
Clearly. If this summit happens and there is no denuclearization, who wins? You know who wins? North Korea does, because they are now taken seriously at the table of the leader of the most powerful nation in the world. Okay? So, secondly, who wins out of this? The second is they enact some denuclearization, and we move forward with this. So, the world wins as a whole because it's one crazy guy who doesn't have nukes. And that's a good win. It really doesn't do much more. I think possibly there's... well, here's where there's the win for North Korea, in my perspective. It doesn't mean that borders start opening up and this country all of a sudden has, this free movement of capital across its border. I mean, they remain, I think they truly remain North Korea. They just have the sanctions that are sort of lifted upon them. I think capital moves more freely from China and some other countries. However, North Korea wins again because they have a reduction in sanctions. They probably have business that comes to that country, and they have a stranglehold on that country. So again, little win for the world, no nukes. But again, North Korea is now taken seriously as at the table as a negotiator. And so that's my sort of take home from...
So what do you want to see happen?
So with a... we've been using the term dark horses here. China will always be the dark horse. They will always, and I think for the most part, support that regime in a very clandestine way that we already know about.
Right, they're their only significant trading partner.
Yeah, so I guess a place like North Korea has leverage in two senses, or in two ways here. The first is they gain respect for the fact that they can sit down with, again, the most leader of the most powerful nation in the world, or they go and gain respect by getting nukes. To me, which one is probably better? It's probably better that they sit down and have some sort of negotiation with the most powerful leader most powerful nation in the world. I think that's probably more constructive.
I don't see what they have to lose by meeting with him.
they have nothing to lose.
That's what I mean. To me, aside from paranoia over an assassination plot, I don't know what North Korea stands to lose.
They have absolutely nothing to lose. Where the rest of the world has something to lose is that this country now, this young leader who stands to rule this nation for a very long time.
He's
now,
a barbaric, yes. Eccentric, who is very in love with himself.
Yes.
Okay, so question here. Differentiate between North Korea, though. I'm not comparing these three regimes, okay? That's not what I'm getting at. But compare North Korea having nukes to the fact the world has gone on with 10-plus years of India and Pakistan both being nuclear.
Yeah. So what's the difference?
Or is affecting the world? Do you think he's someone who's willing to use them?
I don't. So I don't think, again, dark horse. I don't really know. I don't think that a lot of people really know that being a fairly isolated country. It's much different from a place like Pakistan in India, where there's much greater transparency to the broader world.
I guess a better way to ask it is, do you think it's more dangerous? for him to have him. Because I said this when we talked about this previously. I said this in my solo cast that I did. Yeah. You know, that I feel like Iran is the bigger threat. North Korea, they both want respect, but Iran has that respect. I mean, we know next to Saudi Arabia and Israel, those three countries, they're the players in the Middle East right now, geopolitically.
So, yeah, so I think the difference between an Iran and a North Korea is the...
Iran knows better.
They do, and I think in their world standing, if you will, as in terms of what they offer the world, I think they're if you're going to rank geopolitical threats, I think that they carry much more weight in terms of their connections and webs that they have within the Middle East and the world. North Korea does not have that. They have they're an isolated country. There's very little that's known about them. So I think both countries getting these weapons is that extra step to have validity
so
in the
world.
Do
you think that North Korea is a bigger threat than Iran? Both being clear.
Who knows better? Iran does. So in terms of the nuclear threat, I tend to worry more about North Korea because
so you would
we
agree
just...
then that Iran falls more into the classic ideology of geopolitics that is MAD, the acronym MAD, mutually assured destruction.
Yes,
they know
yes.
just like why Russia and America never did it. Well, yeah. because the country, especially America,
yes.
most of our nukes are in the sea.
Yeah,
you could destroy the entire all of CONUS, but the entire globe's going under because it's going to be the next ice age. So
yes.
you think North Korea is more likely to not play by the convention?
I believe that because I think they continue to not play by the rules in terms of their and again, it's a weird comparison. However, their structure of governance. The way they control that country, the way that this seems more of a last, like a desperate grasp for validity, that is not Iran. I think there is...
Well, Iran has that validity. I mean, they've
had
it since the overthrow of the Shah.
So to me, someone grasping for validity is more dangerous than Iran, who has a very storied history in the Middle East.
They're settled on the block. I mean, Persia's been around for three forevers. Not that Korea hasn't, but...
Well, not... I guess in the term of, Western civilization and how that's been crafted, then...
Iran has arrived quite some time ago. Again, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, those... You could rank them anywhere, but those are the three big players.
Yes.
Egypt, Jordan, and Syria... Well, Syria, obviously, but Egypt and Jordan have long since... Not that they're not powers, but they're not what they were, especially after the Six-Day War.
Yeah. Who do I think achieves nuclearization without checks first and has a better program? Iran all the way.
Well, they've got a bit more resources.
They do. So I
and
think
Germany's their biggest trading partner. So
yeah. So I just think, in terms of this North Korean summit, I mean, like we got back to before we move on, I think North Korea has absolutely nothing to lose. I think they stand to not that any country is really going to approach them with more respect, but the fact that this would be historic. The fact that it brings this leader to the stage, especially with Donald Trump, is just, to me, is bizarre. I think it's, you know, I don't like to see anybody who suffers in that country to have to suffer because of sanctions, because we know that their oligarchy or whatever you want to call it, the ruling class in that country does very well. It's just a weird situation all around. My fingers are crossed, of course, that something good comes of this. I would love to see that country open up. But I don't know.
Well, just a couple of thoughts real quick here. I know we need to move on. But just some thoughts. We're talking about a nation that has, as a policy, there are people that have been born into gulags that their grandparents committed a crime. This is true, folks. It's called three generations of punishment.
Yes.
Okay, you think the penal system in the United States needs reform? Which it does.
It does.
But look that up. People, their grandparents committed a crime. They've been born into a penal colony. With that, I don't think America specifically has anything to lose here, okay? Beyond just a disaster 2 decades from now with a nuclear war, which there's a lot more to it that I don't see North Korea just saying, hey, we're going to nuke Los Angeles. There's going to be more going on. But I don't think we have anything to lose short of the unforeseen. But I thought, well, only Nixon could go to China. Well, maybe President Trump's the guy to do this.
You know,
I don't know.
I tend to agree with you on that. I will go ahead and say,
if anybody can do it,
in a way, you're right. The United States really doesn't have
South
a whole lot.
South Korea and Japan have something to lose.
A lot to lose, and I think that's what worries places, people like or people, countries like South Korea and countries like Japan, is that they're in a way. By having this summit, there is a legitimate, or rather a validation that he is a leader, that he is, for a lack of a better word, a player in the geopolitical chessboard, I suppose. But anyway, go ahead, and I know you have kind of one remaining thought on this, so please elucidate.
It was just a little thought of, from the perspective, and I have not seen, read, heard any scuttlebutt that this is what the administration's thinking of, but what would you say the idea that in exchange for absolute an agreement from North Korea that there's going to be no enrichment of uranium whatsoever, not even for fuel, nothing. You got plenty of energy resources with China. God knows they're invested across the Middle East and Africa.
Yeah.
Ethiopia is booming, largely in part from Chinese investment. So you don't need it. If they agree to that, we will, and this is something I'm kind of in favor of in Germany as well, but that's a different issue, but we're going to remove our troops from the 38th parallel, the United States.
Hmm.
And well, obviously we can be there in half a day.
That's a really good question.
Just a thought. If they agree to it, and
so I would tend
full inspections and everything.
Yeah. I think my gut reaction to that is I would have to see a detailed plan.
South Korea and Japan would hate it.
They would. They absolutely would hate it. Not necessarily because of North Korea, but because of China. That's and Russia lurking in their backyard.
They would see, well, China kind of cancels Russia out, though, because regardless, even when those two countries were communists, both of them were, they didn't get along.
Yeah.
So I think they're gonna see it as making China more powerful in this situation, and I suppose in a sense it would. I look at it as perhaps a long game move. Number one, we're involved in 6-7 armed conflicts across the globe, whether our listeners are aware of that or not. They're there. We'll talk about that again. But
I think
do we really need a standing presence that big in Germany and South Korea?
I think if there was a formal end to the armistice, if you will, it would have to be, to me, in order for that to work, and I'm certainly like digging farther into this than your sort of topical question there, you'd have to have open borders, not open borders necessarily, but far more transparent government and country there. And then I think the drawback like literal troop drawback would have to be incremental over like a decade or a decade and a half, because North Korea or South Korea rather itself would have to adjust, because what people don't know about operations in South Korea, there's obviously the South Korean army that is standalone or military rather there, but then they also have an element of that military that's embedded with U.S. troops, and huge contingencies are based on U.S. presence there. So that policy would take years to sort of rewrite. So I definitely like the idea, and I think maybe we have to do an episode on military presence in countries like Germany, like Japan.
Perhaps, because that kind of swings back at it. My response to that would be, where I'm coming from is more, I know you're more centered in geopolitics than I am. That pulls back into my domestic policy, which first and foremost, yeah, economics guy here, I'm thinking of fiscal policy here.
Yeah.
There's no way to get the Democrats in mass. I'm not talking about one or two like Heidkamp, but to getting the Democrats in mass to agree to across the board spending cuts without the DOD being on the table. Well, that's one of the biggies, is our troops being everywhere.
Yeah.
We've got a Navy that by far and far and away, the Royal Navy and the Chinese combined, yeah, we'd spank both of them in a head-to-head fight.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to see too, I mean, what countries are actually amenable to see us gone, and I don't think
so. Matter.
Yeah, you're true. It's true. And I think this is a good, yeah, I think this is a good, well, I mean,
another episode, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I just think there are countries, there are troops, absolutely, but
well, the rest of the world bitches enough.
It's true.
About America sticking its nose in, well, here you go.
Yeah, here's our out. I think North Korea is potentially one of those that may not necessarily want to see us go. Whereas a Germany probably be very willing to see us leave.
North Korea wouldn't want to see us go?
South Korea, rather.
Well, I'm sure they wouldn't.
Yeah, South Korea. Did I say North Korea?
North Korea may not want to see us go, but if that's the deal. But I'm thinking that's a big bone of contention for them, is having us in their backyard. Well, if you agree to full transparency, meaning we can come in there and inspect you with no notice.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just a thought. Maybe it's a separate podcast.
And it would be interesting, because there would be intrusion into just about any place that inspectors would want to go.
Farmland, I'm talking about. If we want to go see what the serfs are doing, that you're starving without the internet out there, we got the right to do it.
Yeah, essentially, we'd do another. Maybe we'll do a whole nother episode on what that would look like.
We could parlay this into human rights gains. There's a lot of good that can come from that. Yes, Europe would cry foul. Well, sorry.
Yeah.
It's not your say, it's our troops.
Yeah.
So it's just a thought.
Yeah. All right. So
moving swiftly along.
The next topic here, and one that I don't know that we'll spend a whole lot of time on. I say this a lot,
and
we do. But as we know, Roseanne Barr made her swift comeback, and once again, downfall. ABC has let her go, and all because of a racist tweet.
Right, now, saying that Valerie Jarrett, former Obama administration, President Obama's staffer, who is, yes, African-American, saying that she looked like a cross between the Muslim Brotherhood, which Islam is not a race, folks, so remember that. That's not where this gets racial, and Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Now, the other one quick caveat here that feeds into the whole PC culture here. I really find it nervy of people like Kim Kardashian jumping in on this, when, forget her husband and all that, but she's one of the many celebrities who somehow thought it was okay to wear blackface. And it's like, who are you to stick your nose in on this? I don't give a damn that your daddy represented O.J. Simpson. You've got no credibility when you wore blackface and you want to dip your nose in here?
Yeah. Okay, so aside from the...
It's obviously a racist tweet. I'm not arguing that.
I think that's the one thing that's very true up front. It was an incredibly racist tweet. And I do have to say, the pharmaceutical company, when she blamed it on Ambien, their response was awesome.
Right. Ambien doesn't... No studies have shown it to make you racist.
Exactly. Was she warranted to be fired? I think so.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
it's
really...
Call.
Yeah, it's their call. The broader,
I have all people, yes, a believer in private enterprise.
Yeah, the real question here is the PC culture. So I didn't really see
across the Joy Reid what she said about has said about homosexuals in the past.
Yeah,
folks, you know, this is a blog from over a decade ago. The internet is forever. The internet archives. Screenshots never go away. And then you look to what Samantha Bee said about the president's daughter. No, not racist, but come on.
Well, okay, but here's where we have to start drawing lines, and I'm not necessarily
comedians.
So look, I'm not defending Samantha Bee's comments about
they're pretty indefensible.
But the difference is that's just being crude and being kind of a dick. It's different from being straight up racist the way Roseanne Barr was. And so the issue in the PC culture,
what about Joy Reid?
Well, and
I postulate that, all right, I say that a white conservative male loses his job for those that blog post. Because think of this, Billy Bush has no real political involvement whatsoever, and he lost his job for an Access Hollywood tape for laughing at, albeit a crude joke, but it was 11 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I
that's what the conservatives are fired up about.
So, and it's true, but I think they're what's difficult with me with this back and forth about racism, and racism's in its own class. And I think where you may see people jumping up and down for this firing isn't because people don't necessarily people dislike Roseanne Barr. I mean, so many people grew up with that show and enjoyed that show. It's because people, I think, are sick of this sort of normalization and this comeback of this, I don't know, like what we've seen since Trump being in office. It's not that as if it was ever gone or just appeared. It was just sort of...
No, I think the sheets and the cloaks and daggers came back out. And I think it's wrong to blame President Trump. You and I have sparred on this a couple of times, and we don't have to get back into it. I disagree with the narrative that he's been overtly racist. I think the guy's an equal opportunity troll, okay?
Yes.
He's trolled his own, if you will, okay? Yeah, I think the guy just loves to troll. I'm not seeing any insidious regime here. The Hitler comparison is not only ridiculous, but it's insulting to the Jewish people.
Yes.
Okay.
So sorry.
The thing that blows my mind here is it's basically Samantha Bee. I'll leave that one alone. Okay. Whatever. With Joy Reid, though, again, I'm not saying anybody deserves to be fired 12 years later for something or 10 years later for something, but in a way it says, so racism's not okay, which is not, but that micro category isn't okay. But in the macro category of bigotry is okay. It's okay to insult homosexuals and to rank presidential candidates in order of who's most likely to be queer. I mean, these were her words.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I think it's hard. I think it's
what does that what does that send?
The message that it does send is that we're picking and choosing who we choose to let into the group, let out of the group, to ostracize and whatnot. I agree with that. This is where this line is so, it's so weird for me.
It just happens. Some people are looking at this. I don't look at it this way. It's being looked at as, it just happens to be the only overt Trump supporter, which is bizarre because Roseanne Barr has been a member of the Green Party all these years, but an overt Trump supporter, she gets fired. But I think that's neither here nor there, okay? She could have been a President Obama and President or a Secretary Clinton supporter, and she still would have gotten fired.
Yeah, that's very true.
So that's a straw. But I look at this like the inverse, the door swing, the upside down, the door swinging the other way to what Chris Rock said at the Oscars when he hosted it, that, no, there's not racism as far as, go get me some lemonade, boy. But it's racism as in, well, we're sorry, Chris, but you're not a Kappa. You know, you're not a member of the frat. That's where this comes in as far as on the other side. I'm looking at it going, I'm alluding to what you were referring to about our picking and choosing. It's like, well, I know Billy Bush was 10 years ago, but he was with Trump and he laughed at a joke he shouldn't have. Joy Reid, we're not going to fire.
Yeah.
It's like, so are you afraid to look bad for firing a black woman?
Yeah,
who made some pretty heinous remarks about gays.
And she did. And it becomes difficult for me to figure out where the sort of the tide
is. Sorry, a white man doesn't get away with that.
No, not at all. Where the tide is sort of moving, the wind is blowing when it comes to ridiculous comments that people make. And yeah, it was homophobic that Joy Reid made those comments. And I'm not saying that this is what's so difficult to pick and choose which one's worse. Because one can be just as hurtful to an individual as the other one can be. It's just your relative position in the world. I think being held accountable for the words that you say and are captured forever in this, that is the internet. You know, I think that there should be consequences to that. And of course, I'm not the judge here, and it's hard for me to. Popular opinion plays a huge role in this, and I think people were. Probably what was happening is people were sick and tired of listening to some of the things that she was saying. And I'm not picking the sides with those individuals.
No, she made it very easy to do that.
She did.
She dug her own grave, and ABC just went, you know what? We're going to help you hop on in there.
And I think and what happens is we have this whataboutism, right? So this, well, look at what Samantha Bee said. Look what Joy Reid said, and look at this. And it's like, listen, this is
I wouldn't fire Joy Reid. I'll tell you that right now. I would accept her apology.
Yeah,
I would. Roseanne, I could go either way on that. As far as I'm not saying that I think what she said was right. Okay, I could have taken it though if ABC said we're going to suspend her for 6 months. Because what if her apology was genuine? You know, maybe it is. But I could, again, I understand ABC firing her. Samantha Bee, she's a crude late night comedian, so I wouldn't fire her. I think it's, at this point, I guess I'm just kind of fed up. Again, I'm a fiscal conservative, but you know, I'm pretty socially liberal, so it's really hard to quantify me as other than a centrist, okay? But I'm kind of fed up with the whole late night scheme in general, because I'm going, okay, I get it. Well over a year in, y'all hate President Donald John Trump. I get it. Do you have anything else to say? Because after a while, it's like, okay, my 14-year-old nephew who's found a joke that's funny and everybody laughed at once, really wants to tell it 15 more times. Okay, it's not funny anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think
that's kind of the thing with me. I'm sick of it.
So I think of this. So let's take like homophobia.
Now you're going to call his daughter the C word?
Yeah. So let's just take the topic of homophobia, and I'm sure there's going to be people out here who are going to jump on me for this, for mischaracterizing, for misrepresenting, for not saying the right thing here. But in a way,
that's our job.
So bear with me here. Something like homophobia, like the United States made an effort. And the Supreme Court really made this the law of the land that said we are giving right to marriage. We are giving the equal rights here. Now, is there equality with your LGBTQ group in the United States today compared to you and I? Absolutely not. I'm saying we have
a ways. Compared to 50 years ago? Absolutely.
Yeah, we have a ways to go. However, I think.
But again, as Bill Gates said. We're not saying we've arrived. There is no arriving, folks. No. There's no point in your life or in the country's life. But Bill Gates made a great point in his Rolling Stone interview and said, okay, but riddle me this. You know, and they kind of jumped on him because he's a small government thinker and he's Catholic. They took their chance. But we're talking about somebody who has done far more philanthropically than Steve Jobs ever dreamed about doing. But he made the point, okay, but if you're black in this country or you're a woman in this country or you're gay in this country, would you really rewind the clock 50 years? Of course you wouldn't.
No, absolutely not. So here's like my thought about this. And again, bear with me here. But we are, okay, so it depends like almost how far removed we are from something like inherent racism as a white person saying something to a black person. Whereas, you know, we're still coming out with people who are grappling with this idea of someone in the same gender being married together. And I'm not saying that Joy Reid's comments were justifiable at all. I'm not. But there are still people that are sort of grappling with this, like, okay, this is the reality of today. And I'm not giving them, a pass. But something like inherent racism, comparing a black person to an ape, or we should be so further removed from that type of rhetoric, that kind of talk, that kind of ideology, because we're talking about the Civil Rights Acts, the Voting Rights Acts of 1964. Like, this happened a long time ago, and the fact that in 2018 we're having these similar conversations, this same narrative on a new platform like Twitter, is insane. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other. That's not the point. But it's the removal from that period of history that I think people are like, whoa, this is like, get this shit off Twitter, get this woman out of her job. Like, what is this talk? And I'm not saying that it would have been like better if she was going after someone who was gay and making a lot of gay slurs and whatever that would be. I'm not saying it's better.
No,
but
that's not the front thing.
I know it's not the point you're trying to make, but I'm just like,
no, I'm sorry. I coughed there. That's not the point that you're trying to make. I see what you're getting at.
Yeah. One's not better than the other.
No.
It's just that today in 2018 to be overtly racist like that,
right. It would be like making a male chauvinist remark in the 19 teens.
Yeah, versus
around the time of suffrage versus now.
Exactly.
I see what you're getting at. You know, so, one is struggling. Joy Reid was struggling to adapt to the curve. Roseanne Barr is so far behind the curve. It's not even funny.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't. Yeah.
Real quick, though, this First Amendment issue that's been raised. I don't know if you've read.
So this is an interesting one.
Go ahead. You launch into the First Amendment.
Okay. So, and maybe correct me if you're.
No. Go ahead.
If I'm off on this, but this is where this whataboutism is happening. Okay. So,
I hate it. It's like diabetes.
So the First Amendment issue would be, are we tying this back to football, NFL? Is this your way you're going with this? I mean, I was going to a bit. Maybe it was going to be a stretch.
You're the host this year.
Well, so you go ahead. You do the First Amendment because I might be off.
I just had a thought here because, again, I'm a private enterprise person. I believe in small government, strong but limited government. I'm a fiscal conservative. And the folks that are arguing, oh, so Roseanne Barr doesn't have it. She absolutely does have First Amendment rights. You have the right to be a racist. If you view her remarks that way, and I do, I've distinguished before the difference in a racial remark, however. You know, I used to play basketball at the YMCA, this is a true story, and I got good at more than just a three-point shot. Why? In my opinion, because I was one out of 10 guys in the court that was white. The other 9 guys were black. That's not a racist remark. That's a racial remark. I'm distinguishing the 9 out of 10 guys on the court were black. Am I being bigotrous in saying that?
No,
I don't think so. Okay, but she has the right to be to support the bringing back the Hitler Youth if she wants to, if she thinks that's a good idea. ABC has the right to not pay her
exactly
for saying that. So exactly. Her First Amendment rights are not being threatened here. She has the right to say these things online if she wants to. ABC has the right to say, well, we're just not going to write you checks anymore. They have that right as a private corporation.
Exactly. So my First Amendment thing, it was a bit more of a stretch, but it was the conservative circles who really liked her as a sort of a pro-Trump champion, if you will, this kind of light in the dark, if you will, in the shadows. And there was a big complaint that there's this conspiracy, this, if you know, the lone conservative in Hollywood, et cetera.
If you consider Trump a conservative, and again, well, Roseanne Barr has been a longstanding member exactly of the Green Party.
But anyway, whatever their
Green Party,
yeah, whatever their views that were being sort of built up were being validated. The bottom line is, this is where the whataboutisms come, because there's.
What does this have to do with Colin Kaepernick, though? I'm a little lost.
It's essentially the exercising of First Amendment rights to kneel. In support of something like the awareness of police brutality, and being up in arms for the fact that they're unpatriotic, and what did Donald Trump say? Son of bitches should be fired, etc. Where on the flip side, you're sort of upset that someone like Roseanne Barr is quote unquote not being able to exercise her First Amendment rights. There's a little bit of that floating about the social medias and the forums, but. Honestly, I think most people.
Both points are all these points are wrong, though, not on your part.
No, they are all wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, what
left
she said,
and right are wrong here. Okay? Yeah, because guess what? The inverse is true. What I said earlier about ABC, I don't care. His little lawsuit, wah. Okay, I don't care if all 32 teams, and you probably disagree here. I don't care if they did collude and say this guy's not playing again. Guess what? They're a private enterprise.
Yeah, okay? It's
if they don't want that cancer in their locker room if that's how they see it.
If they see it that way,
Stephen
yes.
A. Smith made this point. You have the right to do that. Okay, they got the right to not pay you to wear their uniform and kneel. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Stephen A. Smith made the point. Look, maybe the thing for you is to wait after the game, go stand across the street at Civvies and make that point. I understand. Just like I've addressed this before, Tommy Lahren wearing the American flag on her apparel, you know, as a garment, that's against the U.S. code. Kneeling, you're only required to remain silent unless you're singing for the national anthem. Okay, so I get where Kaepernick and company were going. If they want to kneel, knock yourself out. I wasn't offended as a veteran. Okay, but I do see the same point though. They have the right to not hire him.
Yeah, and for some people, that's a sad reality, but it is the truth. And this is the same thing that goes on with Roseanne Barr and the Roseanne Show. It they they're not holding the purse strings. Someone else is. And if they don't like that, then they have the choice to not pay you. And
you have the right to be a nincompoop. I just have the right to not pay you for doing it.
Exactly. Now, if we're comparing trying to bring awareness to police brutality versus overt racism on Twitter.
It's not that the ends doesn't matter here.
Yeah, I agree with you. So,
Again, I'm not comparing what Roseanne's saying to what Colin Kaepernick is saying, and I know you aren't either.
No.
Okay.
I agree.
But both private enterprises have the right to hire and dismiss whom they will.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. So, anyway, that's about 40 minutes. So, I think between North Korea and Roseanne Barr, we did really well there. So,
folks, we turned into a pumpkin at 45. So,
yeah, if you haven't heard. So, well, until next time, my friend.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.